Geekscape.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today is the second narration from Gildas the Wise on the Ruin of Britain. Meanwhile, God being willing to purify his family, who were infected by so deep a stain of woe, and at the hearing only of their calamities to amend them, a vague rumour suddenly, as if on wings, reaches the ears of all, that their inveterate foes were rapidly approaching to destroy the whole country, and to take possession of it, as of old, from one end to the other. But yet, they derived no advantage from this intelligence, for, like frantic beasts, taking the bit of reason between their teeth, they abandoned the safe and narrow road, and rushed forward upon the broad downward path of vice, which leads to death. Whilst, therefore, as Solomon says, the stubborn servant is not cured by words, the fool is scourged and feels it not, a pestilential disease morally affected the foolish people, which, without the sword, cut off so large a number of persons that the living were not able to bury them. But even this was no warning to them, that in them also might be fulfilled the words of Isaiah the prophet, "And God hath called his people to lamentation, to baldness, and to the girdle of sackcloth. Behold, they begin to kill calves, and to slay rams, to eat, to drink, and to say, we will eat and drink, for tomorrow we shall die." For the time was approaching, when all their iniquities, as formerly those of the Amorians, should be fulfilled. For a council was called to settle what was best and most expedient to be done, in order to repel such frequent and fatal interruptions and plunderings of the above-named nations. Then all the councillors, together with that proud tyrant Vortigern, the British king, were so blinded that as a protection to their country they sealed its doom by inviting in among them, like wolves into the sheepfold, the fierce and impious Saxons, a race hateful both to God and men, to repel the invasions of the northern nations. Nothing was ever so pernicious to our country. Nothing was ever so unlucky. What palpable darkness must have enveloped their minds, darkness desperate and cruel. Those very people whom, when absent, they dreaded more than death itself, were invited to reside, as one may say, under the self-same roof. Foolish are the princes, as it is said of Thafnios, giving counsel to unwise Pharaoh. A multitude of whelps came forth from the lair of this barbaric lioness in three kyles, as they call them, that is, in their ships of war, with their sails wafted by the wind, and with omens and prophecies favourable, for it was foretold by a certain soothsayer among them that they should occupy the country to which they were sailing 300 years and half of that time. 150 years should plunder and despoil the same. They first landed on the eastern side of the island by the invitation of the unlucky king, and there fixed their sharp talons, apparently to fight in favour of the island, but alas, more truly, against it. Their motherland, finding her first brood thus successful, sends forth a larger company of her wolfish offspring, which, sailing over, join themselves to their bastard-born comrades. From that time, the germ of iniquity and the root of contention planted their poison among us, as we deserved, and shot forth into leaves and branches. The barbarians, being thus introduced as soldiers into the island, to encounter, as they falsely said, any dangers in defence of their hospitable entertainers, obtain an allowance of provisions, which, for some time being plentifully bestowed, stopped their doggish mouths. Yet they complain that their monthly supplies are not furnished in sufficient abundance, and they industriously aggravate each occasion of quarrel, saying that unless more liberality is shown them, they will break the treaty and plunder the whole island, and in a short time they follow up their threats with deeds. For the fire of vengeance, justly kindled by former crimes, spread from sea to sea, fed by the hands of our foes in the east, and did not cease until, destroying the neighbouring towns and lands, it reached the other side of the island and dipped its red and savage tongue in the western ocean. In these assaults, therefore, not unlike that of the Assyrian upon Judea, was fulfilled in our case what the prophet describes in words of lamentation. They have burned with fire the sanctuary, they have polluted on earth the tabernacle of thy name. And again, O God, the Gentiles have come into thine inheritance, thy holy temple have they defiled. So that all the columns were levelled with the ground, by the frequent strokes of the battering ram, all the husbandmen routed, together with their bishops, priests, and people, whilst the sword gleamed and the flames crackled around them on every side. Lamentable to behold, in the midst of the streets lay the tops of lofty towers, tumbled to the ground, stones of high walls, holy altars, fragments of human bodies covered with livid clots of coagulated blood, looking as if they had been squeezed together in a press, and with no chance of being buried save in the ruins of the houses or in the ravening bellies of wild beasts and birds. With reverence be it spoken for their blessed souls, if indeed there were many found who were carried at that time into the high heaven by the holy angels. So entirely had the vintage, once so fine, degenerated and become bitter, that in the words of the prophet, there was hardly a grape or ear of corn to be seen where the husbandman had turned his back. Some, therefore, of the miserable remnant, being taken in the mountains, were murdered in great numbers. Others, constrained by famine, came and yielded themselves to be slaves forever to their foes, running the risk of being instantly slain, which truly was the greatest favour that could be offered them. Some others passed beyond the seas with loud lamentations instead of the voice of exhortation. Thou hast given us as sheep to be slaughtered, and among the Gentiles hast thou dispersed us. Others, committing the safeguard of their lives, which were in continual jeopardy, to the mountains, precipices, thickly wooded forests, and to the rocks of the seas, albeit with trembling hearts, remain still in their country. But in the meanwhile, an opportunity happening, when these most cruel robbers were returned home, the poor remnants of our nation, to whom flocked from diverse places round about our miserable countrymen as fast as bees to their hives for fear of an ensuing storm, being strengthened by God, calling upon him with all their hearts, as the poet says, with their unnumbered vows they burden heaven, that they might not be brought to utter destruction, took arms under the conduct of Ambrosius Aurelianus, a modest man, who, of all the Roman nation, was then alone in the confusion of this troubled period by chance left alive. His parents, who for their merit were adorned with the purple, had been slain in these same broils, and now his progeny, in these our days, although shamefully degenerated from the worthiness of their ancestors, provoke to battle their cruel conquerors, and by the goodness of our Lord obtain the victory. After this, sometimes our countrymen, sometimes the enemy, won the field, to the end that our Lord might, in this land, try after his accustomed manner these his Israelites, whether they loved him or not, until the year of the siege of Bath Hill, when took place also the last, almost, though not the least, slaughter of our cruel foes, which was, as I am sure, 44 years and 1 month after the landing of the Saxons, and also the time of my own nativity. And yet neither to this day are the cities of our country inhabited as before, but being forsaken and overthrown, still lie desolate, our foreign wars having ceased, but our civil troubles still remaining. For as well the remembrance of such terrible desolation of the island, as also of the unexpected recovery of the same, remained in the minds of those who were eyewitnesses of the wonderful events of both, and in regard thereof, kings, public magistrates, and private persons, with priests and clergymen, did all and every one of them live orderly according to their several vocations. But when these had departed out of this world, and a new race succeeded, who were ignorant of this troublesome time, and had only experience of the present prosperity, all the laws of truth and justice were so shaken and subverted, that not so much as a vestige or remembrance of these virtues remained among the above-named orders of men, except among a very few, who, compared with the great multitude which were daily rushing headlong down to hell, are accounted so small a number that our Reverend Mother, the Church, scarcely beholds them, her only true children, reposing in her bosom, whose worthy lives, being a pattern to all men and beloved of God, inasmuch as by their holy prayers, as by certain pillars and most profitable supporters, our infirmity is sustained up, that it may not utterly be broken down. I would have no one suppose I intended to reprove, if forced by the increasing multitude of offences. I have freely, aye, with anguish, not so much declared as bewailed the wickedness of those who are become servants, not only to their bellies, but also to the devil, rather than to Christ, who is our blessed God, world without end. Britain has kings, but they are tyrants. She has judges, but unrighteous ones, generally engaged in plunder and rapine, but always preying on the innocent. Whenever they expect themselves to avenge or protect, it is sure to be in favour of robbers and criminals. They have an abundance of wives, yet are they addicted to fornication and adultery. They are ever ready to take oaths, and as often perjure themselves. They make a vow, and almost immediately act falsely. They make war, but their wars are against their countrymen, and are unjust ones. They rigorously prosecute thieves throughout their country, but those who sit at table with them are robbers, and they not only cherish, but reward them. They give alms plentifully, but in contrast to this is a whole pile of crimes which they have committed. They sit on the seat of justice, but rarely seek for the rule of right judgment. They despise the innocent and the humble, but seize every occasion of exalting to the utmost the bloody-minded, the proud, murderers, the combined and adulterers, enemies of God, who ought to be utterly destroyed and their names forgotten. They have many prisoners in their jails, loaded with chains, but this is done in treachery rather than in just punishment for crimes. And when they have stood before the altar, swearing by the name of God, they go away and think no more of the holy altar than if it were a mere heap of dirty stones. This horrid abomination, Constantine, the tyrannical whelp of the unclean lioness of Damnonia, is not ignorant. And he's talking about a later Constantine here, obviously not Constantine the Great. This horrid abomination Constantine, the tyrannical whelp of the unclean lioness of Damnonia, is not ignorant. This same year, after taking a dreadful oath, whereby he bound himself first before God by a solemn protestation, and then called all the saints and Mother of God to witness that he would not contrive any deceit against his countrymen. He nevertheless, in the habit of a holy abbot amidst the sacred altars, did with sword and javelin, as if with teeth, wound and tear, even in the bosoms of their temporal mother, and of the church, their spiritual mother, two royal youths, with their two attendants, whose arms, although not eased in armour, were yet boldly used, and stretched out towards God and his altar, will hang up at the gates of thy city, O Christ, the venerable ensigns of their faith and patience. And when he had done it, the cloaks, red with coagulated blood, did touch the place of the heavenly sacrifice. And not one worthy act could he boast of, previous to this cruel deed. For many years before, he had stained himself with the abomination of many adulteries, having put away his wife, contrary to the command of Christ, the teacher of the world, who has said, "What God hath joined together, let not man separate." And again, "Husbands, love your wives." For he had planted in the ground of his heart, an unfruitful soil for any good seed, a bitter scion of incredulity and folly, taken from the vine of Sodom, which being watered with his vulgar and domestic impieties, like poisonous showers, and afterwards audaciously springing up to the offence of God, brought forth into the world the sin of horrible murder and sacrilege, and not yet discharged from the entangling nets of his former offences, he added new wickedness to the former. Go to now, I reprove thee as present, whom I know as yet to be in this life extant. Why standest thou astonished, O thou butcher of thine own soul? Why cost thou wilfully kindle against thyself the eternal fires of hell? Why cost thou, in place of enemies, desperately stab thyself with thine own sword, with thine own javelin? Cannot those same poisonous cups of offences yet satisfy thy stomach? I look back, I beseech thee, and come to Christ, for thou labourest, and art pressed down to the earth with this huge burden. And he himself, as he said, will give thee rest. Come to him who wisheth not the death of a sinner, but that he should be rather converted and live. Unloose, according to the prophet, the bands of thy neck, O thou son of Zion. Return, I pray thee, although from the far remote regions of sins, unto the Most Holy Father, who, for his Son, that will despise the filthy food of swine, and fear a death of cruel famine, and so come back to him again, hath with great joy been accustomed to kill his fatted calf, and bring forth for the wanderer the first robe and royal ring, and then taking as it were a taste of the heavenly hope, thou shalt perceive how sweet our Lord is. For if thou must contemn these, be thou assured, thou shalt almost instantly be tossed and tormented in the inevitable and dark floods of endless fire. What cost thou also, thou lion's whelp, as the prophet saith, Aurelius Conanus? Art not thou as the former, if not far more foul, to thy utter destruction, swallowed up in the filthiness of horrible murders, fornications, and adulteries, as by an overwhelming flood of the sea? Hast not thou by hating, as a deadly serpent, the peace of thy country, and thirsting unjustly after civil wars and frequent spoil, shut the gates of heavenly peace and repose against thine own soul? Being now left alone as a withering tree in the midst of a field, remember, I beseech thee, the vain and idle fancies of thy parents and brethren, together with the untimely death that befell them in the prime of their youth, and shalt thou, for thy religious deserts, be reserved out of all thy family to live 100 years, or to attain to the age of a Methuselah? No, surely, but unless, as the psalmist saith, thou shalt be speedily converted unto our Lord, that king will shortly brandish his sword against thee, who has said by his prophet, I will kill, and I will cause to live. I will strike, and I will heal, and there is none who can deliver out of my hand. Be thou therefore shaken out of thy filthy dust, and with all thy heart converted to him who hath created thee, that when his wrath shall shortly burn out, thou mayest be blessed by fixing thy hopes upon him. But if otherwise, eternal pains will be heaped up for thee, where thou shalt be ever tormented and never consumed in the cruel jaws of hell. Thou also, who like to the spotted leopard, art diverse in manners and in mischief, whose head now is growing grey, who art seated on a throne full of deceits, and from the bottom, even to the top, art stained with murder and adulteries, thou naughty son of a good king. Like Manasses, sprung from Ezekiah, Vortipor, thou foolish tyrant of the Domitians, why art thou so stiff? What, do not such violent gulfs of sin, which thou dost swallow up like pleasant wine, nay, rather which swallows thee up, as yet satisfy thee, especially since the end of thy life is daily now approaching? Why cost thou heavily clog thy miserable soul with the sin of lust, which is fouler than any other, by putting away thy wife, and after her honourable death, by the base practices of thy shameless daughter? Waste not, I beseech thee, the residue of thy life in offending God, because as yet an acceptable time and day of salvation shines on the faces of the penitent, wherein thou mayest take care that thy flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath day. Turn away, according to the psalmist, from evil and do good, seek peace and ensue it, because the eyes of our Lord will be cast upon thee when thou doest righteousness, and his ears will be then open unto thy prayers, and he will not destroy thy memory out of the land of the living. Thou shalt cry, and he will hear thee, and out of thy tribulations deliver thee. For Christ doth never despise a heart that is contrite and humbled with fear of him. Otherwise the worm of thy torture shall not die, and the fire of thy burning shall never be extinguished. And thou too, Cunaglass, why art thou fallen into the filth of thy former naughtiness? Yea, since the very first spring of thy tender youth, thou bear, thou rider, and ruler of many, and guider of the chariot, which is the receptacle of the bear, thou contemner of God, and vilifier of his order, thou tawny butcher, as in the Latin tongue thy name signifies. Why dost thou raise so great a war, as well, against men as also against God himself? Against men, yea, thine own countrymen, with thy deadly weapons, and against God with thine infinite offences. Why, besides thine other innumerable backslidings, having thrown out of doors thy wife, dost thou, in the lust, or rather stupidity of thy mind, against the apostles' express prohibition, denouncing that no adulterers can be partakers of the kingdom of heaven, esteem her detestable sister, who had vowed unto God the everlasting continency, as the very dower, in the language of the poet, of the celestial nymphs? Why must thou provoke, with thy frequent injuries, the lamentations and sighs of saints, by thy means corporally afflicted, which will in time to come, like a fierce lioness, break thy bones in pieces? Desist, I beseech thee, as the prophet saith, from wrath, and leave off thy deadly fury, which thou breathest out against heaven and earth, against God and his flock, and which in time will be thine own torment. Rather with altered mind obtain the prayers of those who possess a power of binding over this world, when in this world they bind the guilty, and of loosing when they loose the penitent. Be not, as the apostle saith, proudly wise, nor hope thou in the uncertainty of riches, but in God, who giveth thee many things abundantly, and by the amendment of thy manners purchase unto thyself a good foundation for hereafter, and seek to enter into that real and true state of existence, which will be not transitory, but everlasting. Otherwise thou shalt know and see, yea, in this very world, how bad and bitter a thing it is for thee to leave the Lord thy God, and not have his fear before thine eyes, and in the next, how thou shalt be burned in the foul encompassing flames of endless fire, nor yet by any manner of means shalt ever die, for the souls of the sinful are as eternal in perpetual fire, as the souls of the just in perpetual joy and gladness. And likewise, O thou dragon of the island, who hast deprived many tyrants, as well of their kingdoms as of their lives, and though the last mentioned in my writing, the first in mischief, exceeding many in power, and also in malice, more liberal than others in giving, more licentious in sinning, strong in arms, but stronger in working thine own soul's destruction. Maglacoon, why art thou, as if soaked in the wine of the sodomitical grape, foolishly rolling in that black pool of shine offences? Why dost thou wilfully heap like a mountain upon thy kingly shoulders such a load of sins? Why dost thou show thyself unto the King of Kings, who hath made thee, as well in kingdom as in stature of body, higher than almost all the other chiefs of Britain, not better likewise in virtues than the rest, but on the contrary, for thy sins, much worse? Listen then a while, and hear patiently the following enumeration of thy deeds, wherein I will not touch any domestic and light offences, if yet any of them are light, but only those open ones which are spread far and wide in the knowledge of all men. Didst not thou, in the very beginning of thy youth, terribly oppress with sword, spear, and fire the king thine uncle, together with his courageous bands of soldiers, whose countenances in battle were not unlike those of young lions? Not regarding the words of the prophet, who says, the bloodthirsty and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. And even if the sequel of thy sins were not such as ensued, yet what retribution couldst thou expect for this offence, only at the hands of the just judge, who hath said by his prophet, woe be to thee who spoilest, and shalt not thou thyself be spoiled, and thou who killest, shalt not thyself be killed, and when thou shalt make an end of thy spoiling, then shalt thou thyself fall. But when the imagination of thy violent rule had succeeded according to thy wishes, and thou wast urged by a desire to return into the right way, night and day the consciousness of thy crimes afflicted thee, whilst thou didst ruminate on the Lord's ritual and the ordinances of the monks, and then publish to the world, and vow thyself before God, a monk, with no intention to be unfaithful, as thou didst say, having burst through these toils, in which some great beasts as thyself were used to become entangled, whether it were love of rule, of gold or silver, or, what is stronger still, the fancies of thine own heart. And didst thou not, as a dove which cleaves the yielding air with its pinions, and by its rapid turns escape the furious hawk, safely return to the cells where the saints repose, as a most certain place of refuge? Oh, how great a joy should it have been to our Mother Church, if the enemy of all mankind had not lamentably pulled thee, as it were, out of her bosom. Oh, what an abundant flame of heavenly hope would have been kindled in the hearts of desperate sinners, had thou remained in thy blessed estate! Oh, what great rewards in the kingdom of Christ would have been laid up for thy soul against the day of judgment, if that crafty wolf had not caught thee, who of a wolf wast now become a lamb, not much against thine own will, out of the fold of our Lord, and made thee of a lamb a wolf like unto himself. O how great a joy would the preservation of thy salvation have been to God the Father of all saints, had not the devil, the father of all castaways, as an eagle of monstrous wings and claws, carried thee captive away, against all right and reason, to the unhappy band of his children. And to be short, thy conversion to righteousness gave as great joy to heaven and earth as now thy detestable return, like a dog to his vomit, breedeth grief and lamentation, which, being done, the members, which should have been busily employed as the armour of justice for the Lord, are now become the armour of iniquity for sin and the devil. For now thou dost not listen to the praises of God, sweetly sounded forth by the pleasant voices of Christ's soldiers, nor the instruments of ecclesiastical melody, but thy own praises, which are nothing, wrung out after the fashion of the giddy rout of Bacchus by the mouths of thy villainous followers, accompanied with lies and malice, to the utter destruction of the neighbours, so that the vessel prepared for the service of God is now turned to a vessel of dirt, and what was once reputed worthy of heavenly honour is now cast, as it deserves, into the bottomless pit of hell.
You're listening to Radio Aryan.